Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, folks. Nice to have you back with us. Indeed, it's a pleasure. My name is Doug Llewellyn, and we are excited today because it's Tuesday. It's 12 noon on the East Coast, and that means it's time for another visit with one of our favorite guests, Dr. Victoria Monlock. You know, we talk to her a lot. She's been a kind of a regular with us. We have an amazing series of conversations. If you've never heard Dr. Monlock, I encourage you to hang around because she's an amazing, amazing doctor. Let me tell you a little bit about her. We rarely go into this depth, but when Dr. Monlock began her career as a physician, she was an OBGYN, and she had multiple credentials. But over the years, her practice has sort of evolved, and she now functions like an internist or a general practitioner almost, but with an emphasis still on women. Why, you ask? Well, it had to do with her desire to work in partnership with patients toward their individual health goals. Sometimes that is still in the realm of OBGYN diseases and treatment, but oftentimes it's another condition that will cause people to seek out her for her wisdom and her expertise, particularly if it has anything to do with the female hormone system at stages from puberty all the way through menopause and after. She really is a crackerjack when it comes to focusing on hormones. And I must say, patients applaud her, Dr. Vicky, as they fondly call her, for her ability to listen, really listen to them, to look deeper, give them time, and order specialized tests and hold their hand as they find the answers to their health matters. By the way, she would never tell you this on the air, but let me point out, she's had extraordinary recognition from professional organizations. She has a 4-star rating from U.S. News and World Report. Best in Medicine honors her. The American Health Council and top medical director in 2021, and she was awarded the top women's health physician in 2022 by the International Association of Top Professionals. And it was just a couple of weeks, well, maybe 2 months ago, that Dr. Monlock received an award in Las Vegas. And she had her picture on the billboard outside the Bellagio Hotel. Just like Frank Sinatra was on the billboard at the Sands, it was Dr. Monlock on the billboard at the Bellagio. I mean, what extraordinary honor she has had. Anyway, she has been with us many times, and it's such a pleasure to have her back with us again today. So let me bring her on by saying, welcome, Dr. Monlock. It's a treat to have you back. How are you today?
Oh, I'm phenomenal. Thank you, Doug. That was such a wonderful introduction.
Well, listen, it's so true, and it's such a treat to have you here. I haven't mentioned either, but I want to mention this. You have written two extraordinary books that have had an impact on so many of your patients, and I know I've seen copies of them. I've read one of them pretty thoroughly, even though it was intended for women, because you write so well. But let me start this show today by referring to your book, Full Bloom, which is called Health and Happiness Through Hormone Balancing. On page 117 of that book, you have a section that's headed Inflammation, Is It a Friend or a Foe? So I think we ought to talk about this a little bit. You've talked about it in the past, but let's go into it. What are some of the examples of how bad inflammation can be and how good it can be? For example, when is inflammation a good thing? I didn't know it was supposedly good. How about that?
Well, we never think of inflammation as good, but if you think about the fact that you cut yourself or you injure yourself, then inflammation is actually a way that your body starts to call all healing cells in the body. Everybody, come on down to my finger. I just cut it. I need white cells. I need fibrin. And it starts calling out what it needs. And so it's like a call to action to your body. And it says, down here, right middle finger, I cut it doing something stupid like cutting carrots for dinner, and I need help. So you know, that inflammation is like a bullhorn, and it just brings everything down to where you need it. But if you chronically inflame something, and for instance, let's say that you have a gluten issue, and every time you eat gluten, your GI tract gets inflamed and bloated, and calling all white cells to the GI tract, well, whoa, wait a minute, that's an announcement we don't want going out. But the announcement went out, so all your white cells are now coming to your GI tract to help you fight the gluten that you don't want in there. So it can be a friend when you cut yourself and you want all that recruitment, or it can be a foe when you don't want that recruitment happening because you forgot and had something with gluten in it, and or you don't know you have a gluten issue, and now you get all bloated and uncomfortable, and you might even have cramps. You might even have such an inflammatory reaction that you get a skin rash from eating gluten. Some people go to that extent. So now it's not a friend, it's a foe. It's gone on too long, and it's in the wrong organ system, and so now it's causing mischief.
You know, that's interesting. I gather when anything goes wrong in your system, somewhere along the way, inflammation is associated with that. Would that may be wrong, I don't know, but you tell me. Is inflammation always present when you have a gluten thing, or you know, something more serious? You break a bone. There's inflammation around that bone. Wouldn't it be the case?
Right. Inflammation is kind of like your body's first defense. It's
exactly.
Your way to call all helpers to the area, okay? And so an acute inflammation is usually something that we rely on to help us garner all of our body's defenses to help us fight something, okay? But if it's a chronic inflammation, you've kind of worn out your welcome. You've cried wolf a few too many times, and now your body is saying, yeah, been there. We've already got a bunch of chronic players down there, so you're not going to call all of us down to the gut. We've got other bigger fish to fry, but we're keeping extra of these white cells and killer T cells and things down there that are going to, quote unquote, help us fight that gluten that you're eating, because you eat it all the time. Haven't you figured that out yet? You know, but every time you do, we're keeping extra troops down there, keeping extra cells down there. We're going to fight you every single time, but we're not going to send the whole cadre down there. So, you know, so it, the acute versus the chronic is a little bit different story, because your body figures out you're doing it more than just once in a while. So it's going to keep extra players on hand, and it's just going to keep fighting you. So, you know, after a while, you get used to the fight, and you might not even realize your body is fighting, that bloat you're having is a fight going on in your GI tract. And it can change how your gut functions over time. It can cause you to have a different gut biome even, because it'll change how you absorb or don't absorb certain nutrients in your GI tract.
So then it's important to be able to fight inflammation. You're talking about gluten and what that can do to your gut. In the book, you discuss the Mediterranean diet as being a pretty good inflammation fighter. Why is that? And when we talk about the Mediterranean diet, that's olive oil, yogurt, things of that nature. Am I right?
Well, a Mediterranean diet is a balanced diet. And so it's very, very good at balancing your three food groups of your natural carbohydrates, cutting out a lot of man-made. And you go, no, wait a minute, there's pasta in there. But, you know, Italians in the Mediterranean eat a very small amount versus what Americans call a pasta meal. But it's putting that natural carbohydrate, your fruits and vegetables, in with your protein, in with your lipids. And some of the blue zones in the world, the places that have the best longevity, meaning they're eating the best and they're exercising the most, some of the best blue zones in the world are actually in the Mediterranean. And Corsica, Sardinia, is an example. And so that olive oil is almost a perfect oil or lipid for your body, and it's the more extra virgin it is, the better. But the idea of balancing your natural carb with your protein, with your lipid, is what the Mediterranean diet is all about. And so, again, if that's going to improve longevity because you've got a balance of nutrition going into you, and the best of that nutrition as far as oils and not too much of any one thing, most people do really well even if they haven't done their genetics to find out how they should eat for their genetics. There is that testing that we do in the office that's available.
Really? You test people for what they should eat? That's very
right. Isn't that wild?
And
your genes. Yeah, your genes can tell you that. So we do a cheek swab, and we can tell you, based on your genetics, how your body wants you to eat, not only to maintain your weight, but also to lose weight, and how you should exercise. Do you have more fast twitch or more slow twitch muscles? And how often and how intensely should you exercise, and how should you eat, and the foods you should avoid? You know, and that's a little different than food sensitivity testing, because that's what's happened after your genetics tell you how to eat. Then what other kinds of pesticides, what things has your GI tract sensitized you to? Even though your genes say this food is good for you, maybe there's been a pesticide in that food that the DNA of that wheat seed, for instance, has incorporated. And so it's not genetic that you can't eat wheat, but it's epigenetic, because the wheat seed held on to pesticide and fertilizer, and now you can't get it out of the seed, and your GI tract reacts to the pesticide, which means you're reacting to the wheat, but it's really the pesticide.
I've never heard that discussed before. Do you do this with your patients, you know, as a rule, or only those who are having problems with, you know, some problems?
It's a pretty regularly done set of testing in my office, because it does come up more often than people think. So they may just realize they avoid certain foods, so they don't eat them, but they really never investigated why. But then when they find out that it has now spilled over into other areas, and now with that abdominal bloat, it's causing such constipation with hormone swing that now it's 5 times more exaggerated than it would be if it was just the dietary issue alone. So going after an issue like abdominal bloat, for instance, you have to go after the multiple arms of what it could be causing. So yes, hormone balancing may be a huge part of it, but it may not be the whole answer. So if it doesn't get a patient where they want, then we also look at what foods may be bothering them, and certain food sensitivities are more likely to, you know, attack certain organs more than others. So most people don't know that dairy can actually go after their pancreas and give them a higher incidence of diabetes.
Boy, I'm just thinking, is this something patients should request, this kind of a test or these tests from their doctors when they go see them? Would that be
appropriate? Well, especially if they suspect that food is not their friend, which...
Yeah.
There are many reasons why patients overeat or don't eat the right things. It may be driven by their work schedule. They don't get a break, or they don't have the time to have a meal that they can sit down and enjoy. They've got 5 minutes and they wolf something down, or it's fast food and they don't really know the chemicals they're getting in their fast food, or they have food insecurity and they can only get certain types of food because they aren't getting access to fresh fruits and vegetables, or they don't have a food pantry close to them that they can regularly get food. They have a sedentary job. There can be any number of reasons why people may not eat balanced or eat correctly. But if you do that over time, that can be a major issue to how your body is going to function or not function well for you.
Well, that's a pretty fascinating subject. I really ought to point out, you have a website that if anybody's listening who they want to learn more about you, how to get in touch with you, even if they were interested, or find out about your books, let me give the website out. Folks, write this down. It's rhm.care/ Dr. Monlock's name, which is V.J. Monlock, M-O-N-D-L-O-C-H, M-D, for doctor. So I'll give it one more time. rhm.care/ V.J. Monlock, M-D. I'll give it again a little bit later on, but it's an amazing website and a lot of information there, and you could learn a lot, especially if you're having problems of this kind. You know, another thing, I've always heard that arthritis and problems with your joint had something to do with inflammation. Is that right?
Well, think about two different specific types of arthritis, which are ubiquitous almost in this country, almost endemic. The first is osteoarthritis, which is overuse. So that wear and tear on your knee or your hip, and it may be because it's the type of job you have. But regardless, if you've got, quote-unquote, bone on bone, realize that that's wearing something down. And if a doc tells you you have bone on bone, that's not a death sentence to get a knee replacement or a hip replacement. Usually when you look at the x-ray, you see one-tenth, maybe one-one-hundredth of the joint has bone on bone, but the other part of the joint doesn't. It's perfectly healthy. So you just have to rebuild up the cartilage in that part, and we do that type of work in our office as well with placental amniotic fluid products. You can do it with really good collagen. So I recently brought a collagen elixir into the office, which has been over 70 research studies that talk about how the combination of this particular collagen elixir is so phenomenal for everything in your body, but especially for rebuilding joints and cartilage. So that's one example, is osteoarthritis. A second example, which is actually an autoimmune arthritis, is rheumatoid arthritis. And that's when your immune system attacks your cartilage. So again, what about your cartilage is so poorly recognized or over-recognized by your immune system that it attacks it? And it has to do with some of the actual structure in the cartilage. So if you have a rheumatoid arthritis, there are many times you've got to calm the immune system down before you can have it quit attacking your joint. So inflammation is going to happen with any type of attack, overuse, and now you've like cut, so to speak, your cartilage. You know, you've irritated it to the point that you've got to call helpers to help repair it, or a rheumatoid, or even a psoriatic or a uric acid arthritis where there might be crystals in there. Think of sand in a joint rubbing down against your cartilage. That's not comfortable at all. So those are examples of inflammation that now are potentially causing an issue in a joint.
Is some of that treatment, does that help avoid surgery for replacing a knee, for example, altogether?
Well, if you replace a knee, God didn't give you metal knees, did he?
Right.
Or even ceramic knees. He gave you biologic material in your knee. And so the fact that you wore it down doesn't mean, oh, well, now we just cut it out and throw it away. At least that's not the approach I like to take with people is, if I can give you the building blocks to help you rebuild good, healthy cartilage in your knee in that one-tenth or that one-one-hundredth of your knee and help support that with really good collagen so that you build the building block matrix, and now I give you the growth factors and placental amniotic fluid products to help you rebuild new cartilage, would you rather have a better biologic knee? Or would you rather have them cut out and put a metal knee in there? And everybody has a different answer to that, but I'm a little bit more natural, and I don't think people want to spend upwards of $160,000 to get a replacement joint in their body and then go through the rehab and then the relative time off that they have to go through to rehab from that surgical procedure.
Well, that's really interesting. And by the way, how long a time period does that take to, you know, to get cartilage back in that joint? Enough to
Let me give you my husband's example. And I'm gonna talk about my husband, who was a marathon runner, and he didn't start running marathons until he was in his early 50s. Okay, so long story short, he starts running marathons, and he's been running them, and he's very happy, and it keeps his weight in check, and yada yada yada. But he went running with my daughter and her husband, and they stopped to take a look at something on the side of the road, started running again, and he immediately went down. And he had torn his meniscus, his cartilage in his knee. So, you know, took him in and got an MRI, and I said to him, I can put these placental amniotic fluid products, these exosomes, in your knee. And he goes, yeah. Yeah, I'm just a wife, right? What do I know? So I'm going to go talk to my running buddy, the ortho, that I know. Okay, fine, go see him. So the ortho looks at his MRI, and he goes, dude, you got hamburger going on in here. I can't even help you. Now, that's the ortho, right? So he comes home all dejected and on crutches and whatever, and I said, what? He goes, well, the ortho said there's nothing he can do. I said, what about your wife? You know, so, well, I suppose if that's the only thing, right? So I inject him, and within 2 days, he's off his crutches. In a week, he's out walking a mile and a half in the neighborhood. Now, granted, he never had to be off of his leg. He continued to walk, do his thing, never missed a beat. In 4 weeks, he was mountain biking in our park, which is a glacial park, so it's got hills and moraines and up and down and all over the place. So, you know, I said to him, oh, so how'd this shot work for you? Oh, well, I guess it's okay. Because, of course, he can't admit that his wife might have actually had a better answer for him than the ortho.
Well, that's
so, but
a
he
great
never missed
story.
A beat.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's really the takeaway here. And that's not even putting him on the really good collagen that I brought into the office. That would have actually had him recover even faster. So it's all about the right tools for the situation.
Let me ask you another question. Let's change the subject. You recommend drinking a lot of water to help folks who are having inflammation problems, and you specifically recommend electrolyte-enhanced water. I don't even know what that is, but what does it do, and why is that better for us?
Well, let me start with just the fluids first. You know, what most people have no real knowledge of is that we're a body of salt water. We are 0.9% salt water. So we're not a body of water. We're a body of salt water. Okay, that's number one. So if you drink water all day, you can actually water intoxicate. And what I mean by that is your tissues are used to having 0.9% salt water. If you keep putting in water, then your tissues want to have the same concentration of salt in them that your bloodstream has. But they're different because there's more water in your bloodstream than salt. So your body tries to balance it by pushing water from your bloodstream into your tissues. So guess what? You get fat fingers, and you get puffy ankles and puffy toes.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, my goodness, where did this come from? When you put the balance of some electrolyte back into you, and in a 4-to-1 ratio, meaning that for every 64 ounces of water, 1/4 of that, or 16 ounces, is an electrolyte-based fluid, like Propel, or a G2, which is the low-sugar Gatorade, or a capsule called Endurolyte, which is what athletes do, which is your capsule of electrolyte that you can just pop and keep drinking water. So there are ways that you can actually, yes, keep your fluids in your body going through you to help your kidneys flush toxin out. Remember, kidneys are not only cleaner-uppers of your bloodstream, but they're sponges, and a sponge works best when it is moist but wrung out, right? But if you take a dry sponge, that doesn't pick anything up, does it?
Right.
So don't dehydrate your body. Don't dehydrate your kidneys. Keep fluid going through you, and most people need a gallon of fluid a day going through them. And you go, a gallon? My God, I'll float away. I'll always be in the bathroom. Well, your body needs that to flush junk and byproduct of muscular action and food we eat, and we need that for balancing. Call it the oil in your body. You know, you do it in your car. You put oil in the engine to keep your engine running smoothly. Well, we need fluid and electrolyte in our body to keep it moving smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I was just thinking, Gatorade is one of those electrolyte-enhanced waters, right?
It's electrolyte. Right, but that's got a lot
of sugar.
What does
that actually mean?
The G2.
When you say electrolyte-enhanced, what does that mean? What is electrolyte?
Well, most water is going to have some minerals in it, just based on what part of the country you're in. So here in the Midwest, we have a lot of limestone. And so we get a lot of calcium or hard water. And on the coast, your water may actually have iodine in your water because you're getting it from the ocean, and you may be processing it, but you're still having iodine in your water. So it depends where you live, what is in your water. But most of us as a body have to have small amounts of iodine to help our thyroid work. We have to have our salt, our potassium. We have to have manganese and magnesium. There are certain core elements and core minerals that our body just needs to have for proper functioning. And if we don't put those in, then we take them in a supplement. And so in an electrolyte, especially something that you're using as a replacement for salt, for instance, and you want to just drink water all day, then a low sugar substitute for an electrolyte, like a G2 versus a Gatorade or a Propel, or an electrolyte capsule is going to be a better option. You keep the sugar out of it. We don't need more sugar in our diet. Most people get too much.
Right. Well, that's really very valid information. No kidding. This is such a complex subject. I was going to bring up a subject of inflammation helping the body against viruses. And that's a pretty complex subject, and I know it's something we got to deal with, but we may have to wait till next week to do that. Is there anything to it, though? Does inflammation help defend the body against viruses? Give me a short answer to that.
Well, yes and no. Again, it's the same as acute versus chronic, because a virus can cause inflammation as well as inflammation can help shut out certain viruses. So it's kind of a chicken or egg, which one comes first, so to speak, chronic or acute. So we'll leave that as the teaser for next week.
Okay, that's a very good way to put it. I want to remind everybody about your excellent books. You have two extraordinary books that are available. They're on Amazon. You can get them, folks. Full described as it's perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, and beyond, health and happiness through hormone balancing. Hormones for Health. It's a subject Dr. Monlock talks about a lot with us, and it's such a valid subject. So, and then the other subject is Blossoming. It's a guide for parents if they have a daughter, a young child, you know, who's growing into a teenager. It's all about becoming a woman. It's a fabulous book. Give my daughters. So that's our recommendation. Dr. Monlock, it's so great to have you back with us. We'll be back again next week. And remember the website. It's rhm.care/VJMonlockMD.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Monlock. We'll talk next week, okay?
Thank you. Have a great week yourself.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Vicki. Have a great time.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We sure do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll welcome Dr. Monlock back again next Tuesday at noon Eastern Time. See you then, folks. Till then, take care.